This is Family Policy Matters. This program is produced by the North Carolina Family Policy Council, a pro-family research and education organization dedicated to strengthening and preserving the family. And now from the studio, here's John Rustin, president of the North Carolina Family Policy Council.
Thank you for joining us this week for Family Policy Matters. It is our pleasure to have Naomi Schaefer Riley with us on the program. Naomi is a weekly columnist for the New York Post and a former Wall Street Journal editor and writer whose work focuses on higher education, religion, and culture. Her articles have appeared in the New York Times, Boston Globe, LA Times, and the Washington Post, among other publications. She appears regularly on Fox News and Fox Business. Naomi is the author of a number of books, including her most recent book, Got Religion? How Churches, Mosques, and Synagogues Can Bring Young People Back. We're going to be talking with Naomi today about some of the issues that she raises in her recent book about millennials and faith, and particularly how to bring millennials, or young adults who were born during 1980 or later, back into the church. Naomi, welcome to the program. It's great to have you with us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Well, we're delighted to talk with you. Now, Naomi, as you know, surveys continue to show that millennials are the least religiously engaged generation among us, and they tend to be disconnected from church. What is driving this defection, if you will, of young adults from the church?
Well, I think that there are a number of different factors. From my perspective, I think the most important one is the fact that millennials and Americans generally now are putting off marriage longer, and many people are not, of course, getting married at all. Marriage used to be kind of a signal to people that it was time to, if they had left religious institutions for any period of time, that it was time to come back. They saw marriage and also having children as kind of this moment where clearly you need to belong to a religious community. And so the decline of marriage, I think, in America is definitely having a significant effect on the health of our religious institutions. Another thing which has, you know, come up in a lot of commentary these days is simply that the social pressures to be part of a religious institution are not present anymore. I remember I interviewed Russell Moore. Some of your listeners may be familiar with him at Southern Baptist Convention. Mm-hmm. I interviewed him a couple of years ago, and I remember he told me this story about a friend of his in college who was an atheist and who once asked him for recommendation for a church. And Dr. Moore said, why would you want that? And he said, well, I want to run for office someday. But I think, he told me this story in sort of an effort to demonstrate just how far we've changed. Which is to say, I don't think that social pressure really exists anymore, certainly not to the extent that it once did.
Well, I'm curious about what you started with in discussing the relationship between marital status and religious attendance. Talk about that a little bit more, if you would. What does marital status have to do with religious attendance and faith in general?
Well, I think, you know, one of the things that you see now is this period that we often refer to as emerging adulthood. This is this time when people have, you know, in certain classes, graduated from college. They're often drifting around. They have different jobs, different roommates. They're moving from place to place. And there's kind of there's a restlessness that characterizes this. Some of them are living in their parents' basements, of course. But what you have is kind of a lack of connection to community. And sort of some people might call it a fear of commitment generally, but these are people who are not putting roots down, and I think that that is one way in which marriage and religious attendance have tended to go hand in hand. And this is sort of borne out by the statistics. You know, married people are much more likely to attend religious institutions, and often the happiest marriages are when people attend religious institutions together. So there are two, sort of factors that feed one another.
Well, Naomi, the rise in what is referred to as nuns, or those who claim no religious affiliation, is something that we're hearing more about these days. A recent Pew survey found that nuns as a group have grown from about 16% to about 22% over the past 7 years. How much of this trend is being driven by millennials, in your opinion?
Oh, I think a significant part of it is being driven by millennials. One Pew survey showed 30% of people under 30 chose no religious affiliation. I do always like to caution people, none does not mean people are saying that they're atheists, that they don't believe in God, or even that they don't have certain kinds of religious practices. For instance, there has not been a steep decline in the number of people who say that they pray on a daily basis. What has declined is the communal religious experience. and the willingness to affiliate oneself with a formal religion and or a religious institution. So, you know, in my opinion, I think that those are, you know, certainly significant problems, but I don't think we want to just sort of say, oh, all of these people have given up on God or spirituality or faith, generally speaking.
Well, that's interesting. I know that, not to get too far off on a rabbit trail, but I know that we've seen a very similar type of mentality in the political arena, where many of the newly registered voters in North Carolina, for example, are registering unaffiliated because they don't care to associate directly with either of the major political parties. Now, whether that is related to this or not, I have no idea, but it does seem that there may be a growing trend, particularly among younger people, to avoid a more direct affiliation with particular organizations or groups. They would rather remain somewhat flexible when it comes to that. Does that make sense?
Right. I think certainly they will say that they don't like labels, that they don't like, you know, the bureaucracy, that they don't like being told, you know, sort of a top-down approach to their religion or their political affiliations. You know, and I think that we can sort of give some credence to that without sort of saying this is entirely new. I'm sure that you would have gotten a similar reaction from 20-somethings in previous generations, too, you know, in the sense that they, too, would have said, oh, I don't like being told what to do, and I don't like these labels that you're putting on me. I don't think that's an entirely new sentiment. But I did find, you know, that a number of the religious institutions that I visited for this book, Got Religion, you know, really found a way to bring these millennials in and into institutions. So what I guess the message would be is that it's not a blanket rule. It's not that they don't like all institutions. And I do think that many religious institutions have unfortunately kind of thrown their hands up and said, there's nothing we could say to these young people that would draw them in.
Well, in your book, you point out that millennial Americans tend to be consumers of religion rather than producers. And you argue that this consumerism actually begins in college for many young people. If you will, explain more about the consumerism mentality among young adults and how it negatively impacts faith.
Well, I think what happens is it may start even earlier than college. I mean, the first thing that happens in our religious institutions now is that we are segregated by age. And so you have a kindergarten service and a first grade service. You have a teen service and you have, you know, the young adult part. And each of these parts of a church is geared toward a particular age group. We don't ever want you to have to listen to a message that you don't find completely relevant to you. And I think that really continues and is exacerbated in college, where you get a lot of these college ministry groups. You know, they have a very exciting music. They have wonderful speakers come in. And it's a very enthralling experience for many young adults who really begin to see that version of Christianity in particular as the only version. And it speaks to them. They begin to sort of think, you know, this is every part of religion is going to be geared for where I'm at in my life right now. And I'm never going to have to sort of stretch myself to be a part of a larger community that doesn't look exactly and think exactly like me. So I think what happens then is that these young people are sort of spit out of college at the other end, and it's very hard for them to find a religious institution that looks like the institutions that they've been exposed to in college. And it leaves them, I think, floundering often, and often unable to pick an institution at all.
That's very interesting. Now, one of the recommendations on that note that you have for reaching millennials is for churches to give young adults more opportunities to serve. And we are having a discussion very similar to this at my church, how we can engage younger members of the church to get involved. And by providing them opportunities to serve where they would feel more a part of the community, more a part of what's happening at the church. Why is serving in this manner so important to millennials?
Well, I think, you know, one thing you have is an interesting demographic shift now. I was speaking to a pastor in New Jersey, and I asked him about this problem of not having young adults in the congregation, and he said, well, we thought about this a few years ago, and the first thing I did was I fired my wife. I said, Willie, does that seem like a good idea for your marriage or your congregation? And he said, well, look, you know, she had been in charge of the women's ministry at his large church for more than two decades. And, you know, she wasn't an old, I mean, she was probably 60 at most by the time he fired her. But he said to her, look, we need to give somebody else an opportunity. And you and your friends could serve in this leadership role for another 20 years. But what message would that send to young people walking in our doors? It would say, we don't really need you. And so he sort of turned around and he said, look, you know, you need to step aside and I'm going to go find 20 and 30 somethings to run this group. And the people that he asked, I talked to the people that he asked, and they were, you know, not only flattered, but I think really felt like, now it matters that I show up every week. I have an important role. And I think too often we underestimate what young adults are capable of. I mean, you know, a lot of what goes on in church is not rocket science. I mean, we need people who understand how to raise money, how to organize, how to send out emails about meetings, you know, how to clean up, how to cook, these kinds of things. And so we assume somehow that because they're not married, or maybe they haven't finished their degree yet, or maybe they are living in their parents' basement, that a 25-year-old is not capable of those things. But in fact, they are. And I think that church leaders would do well to recognize that and give them more responsibility.
Well, I know that it can be easy for folks, and maybe particularly individuals in the older generations, to sort of throw their hands up and give up reaching millennials and drawing them into the church. But you've argued that we should not give up on young adults. Based on your research, what makes you at least somewhat optimistic about millennials returning to the faith?
Well, I mean, mostly it was sort of these concrete examples I found where, you know, where religious institutions said, look, we may need to think about strategies differently. I mean, I went to one church in New Orleans, a Redeemer Church, you know, these church plants there. And what was really interesting was that the pastor there had taken a very old-fashioned approach to church. He said, this church is going to be about this neighborhood. This pastor I met, he walks everywhere. He doesn't drive. And this is actually something very common among millennials. They have a very low rate of car ownership. And I think it's not just because they're poor or because they're environmentalists. It's also because they really like that kind of neighborhoody feel. It's something that they did get used to in college, living in dorms and being in walking distance of all your friends. And I think that they've tried to translate that into a church community. So he has really, this pastor has really made the church community about this neighborhood, serving this particular neighborhood. And he has even gone so far as to tell people from other neighborhoods who want to join, he said, you know, you could join, but wouldn't you rather find a church that's closer to you? And what these people get out of it, I think, is this sense of, I can run into the people from my church every day of the week. It affects their sense of accountability. It affects their sense of community. But if you think about what this pastor has done, I mean, this is the model that the Catholic Church used to use for their diocese. I mean, these are the lines. This is the neighborhood. These are the people who are going to become your extended family. And I think that's an idea that really appeals to millennials.
Unfortunately, we're going to have to close on that note, but I think it's important that folks are encouraged, that our listeners are encouraged, that there is hope. Now, millennials may approach things a little bit differently than they did when they were that age, particularly when it comes to their relationship with the church. But I think it's incumbent upon the church to really assess these important issues and work to understand millennials, to find out exactly what they're looking for and see how we can all work together to accomplish that important sense of community. Naomi, unfortunately, we are out of time for this week, but I want to give you an opportunity to let our listeners know where they can go to learn more about your latest book, Got Religion, and to read more of your articles on this extremely important topic.
Oh, well, thank you. So I have a website, NaomiRiley.com, and also all the books are available on Amazon. And I really encourage people to check out Got Religion just because it provides, I think, a lot of concrete strategies for religious leaders and lay leaders and parents and grandparents to think about how to reach this generation.
Well, Naomi Schaefer Riley, thank you so much for sharing your insights on millennials and faith with us on this week's Family Policy Matters. And we certainly wish you all the best.
Thank you.
Before we close, I would like to invite you to follow the North Carolina Family Policy Council on Facebook. Just log in and find us at ncfamily.org. Again, at ncfamily.org. Be sure to like us when you visit. In addition, for instant updates on pro-family news of interest, follow us on Twitter at ncfamilyorg.
Family Policy Matters is an information and analysis feature of the North Carolina Family Policy Council. Join us weekly for discussion on policy issues affecting the family. If you have questions or comments, please contact us at 919-807-0800 or visit our website at ncfamily.org.